Well, good morning, all. It's great to be back for another one. This is a special year. This is what we call a tipping point year, because we have struggled now for, you won't believe this, for a period of time that even goes back before Google, even goes back before YouTube, back in the mid-1980s when my good friend Bernie Bihari told me about his discovery of using low-dose naltrexone for humans and the clinical effects he was seeing. Bernie sends his love to all of you. I spoke to him on Thursday morning. He wishes he could be here. As many of you know, he's in a prolonged rehabilitation facility. At any rate, thanks all for braving the terrible weather yesterday and making it here. And I know some of you here have traveled for more than a day on the airplane from over in the UK. But it's a special time. The reason I say that is because if you look at the struggle to get LDN recognized, it's important to understand why it's taken all this time. It's not a reason to doubt its efficacy at all. It happens that the system for developing new drugs here in the United States rests very much on the appreciation of big pharmaceutical companies as to whether something is going to be profitable for them. So when they're faced with something that may or may not have patent coverage, whose large dose, the 50 milligrams, though approved by the FDA, is already off patent, is being made generically, there's an awful lack of interest on the part of the pharmaceuticals. That in turn feeds right into the system of approval for new drugs. If the FDA is not approached by a pharmaceutical company wanting to run important clinical trials, that stops the system. That's the bottleneck. Nobody ever thought about the possibility, what if a drug comes along that would challenge the existing expensive drugs that are already on the market? What pharmaceutical company would want to threaten its own line? So that may be a possible reason why there's not that much interest on the part of pharmaceutical companies. They seem to run the other way when they hear about this. What could the solution be? The solution would be if the grassroots rose up enough to impress their own doctors in academia to take an interest, from professors like Jill Smith, who we'll hear from very shortly. And it was Jill Smith who broke the barrier and published, you'll hear more of that later. Now today, I'm going to review with you what's popped up only in this past year, 2007, the tipping point year. We have now six or seven clinical trials around the world, all working with low-dose naltrexone. I'm going to try to update you on each of those. Exactly 6 months ago today, we had a very interesting invitation from the National Cancer Institute. And some of the people who are here today attended that meeting. It was for researchers and clinicians who were interested. And the title of it was Low-Dose Opioid Blockers, Endorphins and Metenkephalins, Promising Compounds for Unmet Medical Needs. As a matter of fact, the conference took place exactly 6 months ago today down in Bethesda. From my point of view, it was a triumph because people from the National Institutes of Health began to hear this strange word about this strange drug that they'd never seen in a medical journal, low-dose naltrexone. And I have the feeling that when next people are going to propose a clinical trial using low-dose naltrexone, they'll be a good deal warmer about funding that trial. So in that sense, I think we took a big step ahead 6 months ago. Let me begin to detail the various trials that are ongoing now that tells us this is a breakthrough year. Number one, We got off with a great start when Dr. Jill Smith's original article called Low-Dose Naltrexone Therapy Improves Active Crohn's Disease appeared as an e-publication in January for the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and since then it's come out in the print edition in April. This was the very first clinical study of LDN published by a U.S. medical journal. Dr. Smith is a professor of gastroenterology at Penn State University College of Medicine, and she's going to speak to us momentarily. She found in her original pilot study that 2/3 of the patients went into remission, and fully 89% of the group responded to LDN treatment to some degree or other. And she concluded in her paper, quote, LDN therapy appears effective and safe in subjects with active Crohn's disease. So that open label Penn State trial demonstrated efficacy of LDN in a small group of patients, and as a result, the National Institutes of Health gave resounding backing to a nice grant for her to move on to a phase 2 trial, and that I hope is going to be part of her subject today. And we hope to hear more about that, and also perhaps something of her other very important LDN-related research. Number two, last month, after years of preparatory efforts by many, many advocates, the Institutional Review Board in Bamako, we've all heard of Bamako, right? The capital of Mali in Northwest Africa, the second poorest country on Earth, finally approved plans for a clinical trial to use LDN in possible treatment of HIV. There are probably 20 million people in Africa alone who could benefit if this clinical trial comes back positive, which it will. I'm quite optimistic that all of the clinical trials I'm going to mention are going to be positive. LDN does not disappoint. The signing up of the volunteer patients have already begun over there. And as many of you know, Dr. Jacqueline McCandless she has an unusual title. She's the expatriate clinical monitor for the medical aspects of the trial. It was Dr. McCandless who picked up the torch for this trial after it had been lagging for several years. It wasn't getting anywhere with the bureaucracy over there, and it met her interests perfectly well. I'll explain later that there's a segment in today's agenda when we're going to discuss that trial in some detail. I have some of Dr. McCandless's slides, PowerPoint slides, and you'll hear about it in some detail later. But at any rate, the reason she's not here today is because she's over there. She and her husband, Jack Zimmerman, just finished some of their important work over in the Middle East. I know they traveled through Israel, and I think within the week they'll be over in Mali. So that's two. Three, a long-awaited pilot study of low-dose naltrexone therapy in multiple sclerosis was run by the Milan neurological researcher, Dr. Myra Gironi. Dr. Gironi has spoken at prior LDN conferences here. Several northern Italian hospitals began enrolling patients for this study during first week of December last year, and she reports that the LDN treatment period has just finished this summer, and they're going to now begin to study the data and work through it, and the patients now are going to be followed for about 3 months before they really massage this. Her team over in Milan has long been almost the sole locus, the sole center for academic research on endorphins in disease. And that's exactly what's needed for low-dose naltrexone, because those of you who are familiar with the mechanism, the hypothesis for the mechanism of low-dose naltrexone, that involves the fact that if you take your low-dose naltrexone at bedtime, that during the night, when the lion's share of endorphins are produced by the body, the low-dose naltrexone, which is busy blocking your opioid receptors, your narcotic receptors, which are the endorphin receptors, is blocking them as you sleep, and therefore your body responds by doubling and tripling its endorphin output because the tissues weren't getting any during that time. So when you wake in the morning, low-dose naltrexone is essentially gone. It's not working in your body anymore. It's just this tiny 4.5 milligram dose, much lower than the FDA-approved 50 milligram dose. But the endorphins are there. They last all day long. And what, as we say, is not yet received wisdom, but is probably true, it's the endorphins that are the beneficial upregulators of your immune system. So in essence, when you take your low-dose naltrexone, what you're giving yourself is a stronger immune system every day. In the area of autoimmune diseases, just to rehash what I believe, all the autoimmune diseases, bar none, are based on immunodeficiency. The immune system, in essence, is weak and is unable to discern the difference now between self and other, which is its very important central role. Not to attack self, attack foreign invaders. The moment the immune system is upregulated, it's strengthened, it learns again to stop attacking the joints in rheumatoid arthritis, or the kidneys in lupus, or the insulation around the nerves in multiple sclerosis. And that's why we're hearing that the vast majority of people with autoimmune diseases benefit so well from low-dose naltrexone. At any rate, finally, here's this Dr. Gironi, who was doing a trial of low-dose naltrexone in people with multiple sclerosis and measuring endorphins at one of the best centers who can do this research test. Can't get it from the local labs in the United States. So we're looking forward to that. Here's some of the numbers involved in the trial. And as we go through these trials, I'm going to give you the numbers that were presented by the researchers. The subjects were 40 patients, all affected with primary progressive MS. The study's conclusion in terms of taking the drugs was probably late August, but then there are three follow-ups, monthly follow-ups scheduled and planned. And the anticipated date when the final data analysis will be achieved, ready for possible publication, maybe November this year. It happens that in Prague, just a week ago, there was a European Congress of Multiple Sclerosis, and Gironi and colleagues attended, and I'm just going to read you what they published in a statement about their study. This is a quote: "We have approached a six-month pilot multicentric open-label therapeutic study with LDN aimed at evaluating its safety and efficacy on spasticity, pain, and fatigue occurring in 40 patients with primary progressive MS. Clinical and biochemical evaluations are performed at different time points during the study. Appropriate scales for testing spasticity, pain, and fatigue, for example, the Ashworth, the fatigue severity scale, the visual analog scale, are used as an integral part of the periodic neurological examination. Beta endorphin levels in peripheral blood mononuclear cells are also measured by radioimmunoassay. So far, 40 patients with a diagnosis of PPMS, according to McDonald criteria, have been enrolled in the study. It consisted of 19 males, 21 females, mean age 53 years, mean age at onset of their illness 41 years, and the mean expanded disability status scale of the participants was 5.5. Now, those of you who have not memorized the EDSS scale, 5.5 defines out as the person is able to walk 100 meters without aid or rest. Disability precludes full daily activities. Had it been 5, then they would be able to walk 200 meters. So you get the idea that these people were partly disabled. She went on to say, optimization of drugs has been performed in all patients before the enrollment. Opioid-containing drugs, immunosuppressive or immunomodulated drugs were considered as a contraindication to study enrollment, and then ended by reporting that there were only transitory hematologic abnormalities. Some people showed increase of liver enzymes. Some people seemed to show hypercholesterolemia. Some people had mild agitation and sleep disturbance as the commonest adverse events, but these were transient. Only two dropouts occurred, one for a protocol violation and one for severe increase of spasm. And then says, in conclusion, LDN has shown so far to be a safe treatment in PPMS. We are now collecting and analyzing efficacy results. And when I asked her a week ago, what was her general impression of how the trial was going, she said, LDN, she wrote me back, LDN could be useful for quite a good number of MS patients affected with spasticity, fatigue, and pain. A subjective improvement in fatigue has been experienced overall. And of course, what she's not saying, and what I'm on tenterhooks about, is to hear the results of those beta endorphins. Because my dollar to your penny, those beta endorphins will go up as the people's symptoms get better. And that's going to help make the case for the LDN hypothesis. Number four, if you had to pick a medical center in the United States that's outstanding and has an outstanding neurological department, you'd have to include right up near the top University of California, San Francisco. And by great good fortune and a lot of help and contributions from all of us who contributed to this, a study of LDN, the treatment of MS, is running. And just at that center and at that excellent neurology department under the neurological researcher Bruce Cree, and I'm going to give you some details about it, some 80 patients with MS involved in the double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled, crossover design study of the effects of low-dose naltrexone on quality of life as measured by the Multiple Sclerosis Quality of Life Inventory. Each subject receives either LDN or a placebo for 8 weeks, followed by 1 week without either, and then the crossover, they take the alternate capsule. A substantial contribution, that's what I was referring to, toward the study was made by the LDN for MS Research Fund. I think we all raised, all over the country, about $25,000 went to Bruce Cree to help get this thing moving. Dr. Cree reports as follows. When I wrote him, he says, the study is fully enrolled with 80 subjects and was closed for enrollment as of July. The trial will complete next month with preliminary analysis occurring in December. Final analysis and preparation for presentation will occur in the months to follow. If the trial is positive, my intention is to send a late-breaking news abstract to the American Academy of Neurology. My impression is that LDN is well tolerated due to the very few adverse events reported thus far. And then he says, I have no clinical impression with regard to efficacy because the study is placebo-controlled and blinded, and all patient evaluations are performed via questionnaire. So we have to wait for the final publication time. What I'm reporting to you may seem very dry, but it's enormously important because, as you see, in the decades preceding this year, we didn't have any leverage with the world of medicine. They're not interested in anecdotes at all. They sniff at anecdotes. It doesn't matter if we had 50,000 anecdotes. And you know, we're getting close to where we could have 50,000 good anecdotes, but it doesn't matter to them. They want to see clinical trials. So that's why we're going through these details. Excuse me. Number five, a clinical trial of LDN and the treatment of fibromyalgia at Stanford Medical Center, which is no mean medical center either, out in California. Just getting started this very month by Jared Younger of the Stanford Systems Neuroscience and Pain Lab. It is recruiting 40 individuals who are diagnosed with fibromyalgia and who live in the California Bay Area. The study, as many of the others, is placebo-controlled, double-blind, and crossover clinical trial. Participants will be taking LDN at one portion of the study and a placebo alternatively. The entire study takes 21 weeks, and participants will be taking either LDN or placebo for just 12 weeks. While in the study, participants will need to come to the Stanford Medical Center every 2 weeks for quick checkups. And the projected timetable that Jared told me about, he said October 1st, he sees the start of the study. February 1st, this coming year, he expects to obtain complete data on early participants. June 1st, final data collected, and July 1st, analyses conducted and manuscript submitted. Number six, another U.S. prospective study of LDN and MS. This one, in May 2007, the so-called Mind-Brain, one word, Mind-Brain Consortium, and the Department of Psychiatry of Summa Hospital System of Akron, Ohio, along with nearby Oak Clinic for the treatment of multiple sclerosis, announced a new scientific study of the effects of treating MS with LDN. This one, the principal investigator is a psychologist, David Pincus, and colleagues. They're coordinating the study. 16 weeks, double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled, crossover design, 36 patients with either progressive or relapsing remitting MS. The study will examine symptom severity as well as any changes in quality of life, sleep patterns, and affective status. That's what they're particularly interested in. They're interested very much in feeling states and how that changes with LDN. They're interested very much in the rumors that have been surfacing that mental fog improves a good deal when you take LDN, and they're looking at that cognitive aspect. They say the study will examine, I may have said this, symptom severity as well as any changes in quality of life, sleep patterns, and affective states. In early October, this is what Pincus wrote to me when I asked him to fill me in on how things were going. He says, we have enrolled more than 20 of the 36 people intended. We expect to be fully recruited within the next 3 to 4 weeks, and 3 months following the end of enrollment, we'll have all the data. The study's going well. A couple of people have dropped out or been removed for one reason or another, but none because of a problem with sleep. One patient had sleeping issues for a few nights, but then has been okay. We're looking at the psychoactive properties of LDN, as well as assessing improvement of MS symptoms, and hope to find some changes in perception of energy level that correlate with personality type and amount of dreaming reported. I can't say for sure how long analysis will take, but all elements of data collection are occurring well. There's no reason to think that we will have a great delay in time for analysis. If we are permitted, he said, I'll pre-announce outcomes to your website as soon as we have them available. My website, the one that my son Joel, who's a crackerjack at computer, helps mount whenever I send him any material and he arranges and so forth. That's the website, www.ldninfo.org. That's the short name. You can also go there by going to lowdosenaltrexone.org. And then last, not a clinical trial, but worth mentioning, is another story coming out of Penn State. In 2006, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, of all people, I mean, people who for years had actually had on their website a warning, you don't want to mess with this LDN stuff because, I mean, I'm not quoting them, but in paraphrase, because after all, we all know that, you know, autoimmune diseases are due to an aggressive immune system, and this strengthens the immune system, so, you know, stay away from it. They've softened considerably now because they've been barraged. The barrage of people writing them and saying, I'll never send you another penny unless you do something about this. So they reached deep into their pockets and came up with $40,000 for one of the outstanding basic researchers studying LDN, opioids, metenkephalin, and so forth for decades. PhD Dr. Ian Zagon at Pennsylvania State University in Hershey, and they awarded him a small pilot award, $44,000, for an animal study title of his project is Role of Opioid Peptides and Receptors in MS. The study treats an animal model of MS daily with either a high dose of naltrexone or a low dose of naltrexone to determine whether naltrexone influences disease course. Here's how Zagon described the project. This research project raises the question of whether endogenous opioids and opioid receptors influence the course of MS. This is a novel and innovative concept that is valuable to explore. To test this hypothesis, we are subjecting rats to experimental autoimmune encephalomyelitis, referred to as EAE as an acronym, a model that mimics MS. Animals will be treated daily with a high dose of naltrexone or a low dose of naltrexone. Our expectations are that continuous opioid receptor blockade, that means the high dose of naltrexone, will exacerbate the progression of MS, make it worse, whereas a low dose of naltrexone will retard the course of this disease. Evidence for the involvement of endogenous opioids and opioid receptors in MS will open a new field of research related to the pathogenesis of this disease and contribute to the development of strategies for treatment. So that's why I say this is a breakthrough year. And now we're going to hear from some key people involved in the breakthrough.